compute from the data what's called the X-ray transform of the function f, where the function f is a function which characterizes the interaction of the object with the radiation that would be the attenuation coefficient in ordinary X-ray tomography. So we get the line integrals of f. Interesting for us is the parametrization of the lines I'm using. I parametrize them by their direction theta with polar angle phi. Theta is a unit vector. In two dimensions, we use unit vector theta perp orthogonal to theta, and we use the signed distance of this line from the origin in direction of theta perp, which we denote by S, to parametrize the line by theta and S, and then we can write this line integral in this way. Now, for sampling purposes, the interesting thing is what is the domain the data function is defined on, and so it's more convenient to use the angle phi than the unit vector theta. If we use the angle phi as parametrizing the line, then the data function is defined on the group T cross R, where T is the circle group, which means we have a function which is periodic with period 2 pi in one of its two variables and not periodic in the other. So the goal of tomography would be to reconstruct the function f from finitely many measurements of these line integrals. And of course we can't get arbitrarily high resolution. So what's usually done is one attempts to reconstruct an approximation E star F, where E is called the point spread function, and it should be an approximate delta function, and the better it approximates the delta function, the higher the resolution gets, but of course the more data I will need. So the choice of E will be matched to both the quality and the amount of data available. So the question is, how many measurements would I need to achieve a certain resolution? The tool I want to use to address this question is the Shannon sampling theory. The standard or classical sampling theorem requires the sampling set, which is the set of points at which I measure the data function, to be a discrete subgroup of the underlying group T cross R. And of course that's a restriction which one later on wants to relax a little bit, but for the time being we focus our attention on lattices. And for tomography, not all lattices are useful. If you have some device, then you want to measure more than one ray in any given direction. So we pick out those subgroups which contain more than one ray in any given directions and call them admissible sampling lattices. So examples of admissible sampling lattices are the standard lattice, which one would do first if one wouldn't know anything better. One has equidistant samplings in both variables, and the step size in the S variable we denote by D, and the step size in the angle is 2 pi over P. So P is the number of angles of irradiation over the full circle. An alternative lattice would be an interlaced lattice, and you see that for each fixed angle, I have again equidistant detectors with step size d, but I shift my detector array by half a detector spacing back and forth between adjacent angles. So if I move from one angle to the next. My detector array has the same spacing, but it is the whole array is moved by half a detector spacing. I go a further angle and I move back. And for various reasons, these two lattices turn out to be the first choices among all other admissible sampling lattices. So to analyze their relative merits, let's introduce some Fourier analysis on this group with the aim of formulating the classical sampling theorem in this setting. So the Fourier transform is simply a Fourier coefficient in the periodic variable and a normal Fourier integral in the non-periodic variable. The inverse Fourier transform correspondingly is a combination of an inverse Fourier integral and a Fourier series. Then we need the reciprocal lattice for our given sampling lattice, and that is the set of all points, so that the inner product with any point in the original lattice is a multiple of 2 pi. With these preparations, we can look at the classical sampling theorem. So the idea is I have measured my data function g on a sampling lattice L. So my data are g of y, where y is in L. My goal is to interpolate g to other values, and my interpolation procedure is this discrete convolution, where the kernel is the inverse Fourier transform of the indicator function of some bent region K, where I assume that K is a set in Fourier space, and the Fourier transform of G is ideally concentrated in K. So then this interpolation procedure gives me an error of this form, where you see it depends entirely on the size of the Fourier transform of the data function outside the set K. And this error is called the aliasing error. Oh, thank you. So this is called the aliasing error. Why? It's for the non-engineers. Why do we call this aliasing? If you take the Fourier transform of the SG, you will find that it vanishes outside K. So if K is a low-frequency region, say, then this SG has only low frequencies. But what happens is in these low frequencies, SG are contributing the high frequencies of G itself. So the high frequencies of G are aliased to become low frequencies in S. If there are no high frequencies present in G, then the interpolation is exact and we have the classical sampling theorem. But in tomography, that's never the case, since the function we look at have compact support. So this tells us what is tomography in very simple terms, what is sampling theory in very simple terms. I would like to talk about two themes. One is what application has sampling theory had in tomography. And we see three areas: identification of efficient sampling schemes, meaning minimization of the number of measurements needed for my desired resolution. Then it helps in numerical analysis of certain reconstruction algorithms. It turned out that reconstructing from efficiently sampled data is not automatically yielding a good picture, and a detailed analysis of the algorithm was required to understand what do I need to do to get a good picture from fewer data. And this classical sampling theory gives us an intuitive qualitative understanding of artifacts. On the other hand,
can I extend sampling theory to more general sampling sets? One possibility would be periodic sampling sets, where now the sampling set is a union of cosets of one subgroup. One can go further and try to do sampling on unions of different lattices. Those sets are still highly structured in that they are built from unions of sets which are subgroups, and one can try to exploit this structure still present. And again, these various data acquisition modes in tomography stimulate the need to have a unified formulation of all the samplings so that you can write it down once and not do the same thing over and over again, and led to a rediscovery of formulating the theory on locally compact abelian groups, which had been done in the 60s by Kivanek and then largely forgotten, although it deserves more attention from applied people. Let's go back and go over the applications of the classical sampling theorem. It contained a density condition on the sampling set, namely the condition that the translates of the band region with respect to the reciprocal lattices should be disjoint. See, that was the hypothesis in the theorem. Now, the more dense the original sampling lattice is, meaning the more points I sample, the more sparse the reciprocal lattice gets, so the easier it is, in a sense, to satisfy this disjointness condition. So the first task is to find a suitable bent region for tomography. This was done in the 80s by Lindgren and Retti, and it turns out this interlaced lattice, which actually had been suggested first by Alan Cormack, one of the pioneers of tomographies, out of entirely geometric reasoning, turns out to have the potential to lead to much more efficient sampling, allowing to double the detector space. And we can see that in pictures. If we look at the set found by Retti and Lindgren, which has basically a bowtie shape. So that's the basic thing to keep in mind about this set. It's a bowtie shape, it's not a sphere or a rectangle, and identifying efficient sampling lattices means exploiting this particular shape of the bent region.
K is the set in where the transform variable is, is that right?
This is a set in Fourier space.
So it's the interval in the one-dimensional. It's the band where the band-limited function lives in the one-dimensional sampling theory.
Yes, exactly. See, in the one-dimensional sampling theory, it would be just an interval on the line. In multidimensional, it will be some bounded set. In multidimensional, you have more choices and possibilities for the shape, and so this creates opportunity to try to exploit that. Now, if you use the standard sampling, then the translates look like this. And to keep them disjoint, this is as dense as you can pack them, which means there's a lot of open space here, and you can imagine if we use a different lattice, we might be able to fill in some of that space and get away with fewer sampling points. This is exactly what the interlaced lattice does. There, the reciprocal lattice gives translates, which shifts these two columns a little bit, but not too much, and then is able to fit another copy disjointly in between, resulting in this potential to save on the required measurements. Put this aside. Now it turned out that initial reconstructions using this lattice were not satisfactory, and a detailed analysis of the algorithm showed that an interpolation step in the filtered back projection algorithm, which was entirely harmless in the standard case and nobody ever paid any attention to, became very critical in the interlaced case and had to be done more carefully. And after that was done, good pictures could be obtained. here's an example. This is basically a rat femur, a rat bone. Very small sample, like maybe one centimeter is the whole thing, so this is a lot smaller. This comes from a high-resolution scanner at the Mayo Clinic, where they do research in fine structure of tissue. So this is the standard lattice, and this reconstruction serves as a reference for the resolution you get with the scanner. A naive reconstruction from the interlaced lattice gives these huge artifacts, but if the interpolation is done better, I get this picture, which is in resolution almost as good as this one, though slightly more noisy still. Compare this to the standard lattice with half the data, and you see the increase of resolution through efficient sampling is very substantial. So there's some reason to look at the sampling issues from the sampling theory point of view. But I'm not presenting the details of the numerical analysis of the algorithm, but I have a reprint for people who are interested to look at that. Nicer for a talk is to look at qualitative understanding of artifacts. An interesting feature of the interlaced lattice is that the error may increase if the detector spacing is lowered, which means I can do worse by taking more data. So that's an interesting thing to understand. Another thing is that undersampling in the number of views is much worse in effect than it is for the standard lattice, which unfortunately negates some of the advantages of the interlaced lattice. And there are simple ways to intuitively understand why these two things are true. Let's look first at the why can I do worse when I take more data. If I look at the disjointness conditions, which are in the hypothesis of the sampling theorem, in the standard lattice, I get that my detector spacing should not be bigger than pi over b, where b is the cutoff frequency, which I must know something about my object. So let's say its Fourier transform is basically concentrated in a sphere of radius b. If I know that, then I know I can sample fine if I let the detector spacing not be larger than pi over b. And then I take a little bit more than b views over 180 degrees, or 2 b views over 360 degrees. The point to observe here is that the two conditions on the detector spacing and the number of views are independent of each other. And you could get them by doing a one-dimensional sampling analysis on both variables separately. Now, for the interlaced lattice here, the argument is genuinely two-dimensional, and this is reflected in the sampling condition, that the sampling condition on the number of views does contain the detector spacing. And you see, if you decrease the detector spacing, you make this bigger, and suddenly you also need more views. See, and if you don't take more views and only decrease the detector spacing, you violate the condition, although you have sampled more data. And this is easily understood by looking at the overlapping copies of the bent region.
So here's our central bent region, and the dotted lines are some of the copies. If the D is too small, then I see the copy on top overlaps my central copy, and this causes a severe artifact. If the D is just right, then I get disjointness. Now, if the D becomes too small, then this copy here will move upwards, causing an overlap here, which is sketched here. And this causes artifacts in the image and leads to bad sampling, although more data are taken. And only if I make D twice as big as it is here, then I have disjointness again. So the sweet spot is fairly narrow, and one can do a numerical simulation with a function which is basically the inverse Fourier transform of the indicator function of a disk, which is challenging because the Fourier transform doesn't become very small near the boundaries of the bent region. So I must observe the sampling conditions fairly stringently. And of course, I've broken radial symmetry so that also needs sufficiently many views. And since I know the original, I can use a discrete L2 error in the reconstruction. And since this is a bent-limited function, I should get very accurate reconstructions from this theory. And here you see how the error looks. If the sampling conditions for efficient sampling are exactly satisfied, the error is very small, but I can violate them either by taking too large a detector spacing, which leads immediately to a catastrophe. So the 50 means 50% relative error. But also, if I make it too small, the error goes up to over 50%, unless I reach twice the number and get small again. So the other interesting thing to understand is, why is undersampling in the number of views so much worse in the interlaced sampling? Here I show you the whole sample. You see this red bone was embedded in a much larger outer mass. See, so this is with a standard lattice, basically the same reconstructions where I showed the central region before. If the whole thing is reconstructed with efficient sampling, we see that it's still fine here, but outside there are massive problems. See, and this can be understood in detail, that one needs more views to get it also well enough in the outside, but in this case we didn't need that. But let's understand where that comes from. Let's assume I want to reconstruct with a standard lattice, and I want to reconstruct the Fourier transform of my data at this point, which is at the outer end of the bent region. And the point to keep in mind is, in tomography, these absorption coefficients are non-negative functions. That means the Fourier transform will assume its maximum at the zero frequency and then fall off fairly quickly, so that here these values here are not very large, and they shouldn't be very large. Now, according to the aliasing, I will not only get the exact value here, I will get the sum of this one and its translated copies. But all of these three lie outside my essential bent region, so I can hope they won't add much. If I undersample in the angle, I get some overlap, namely from this point now, who has moved into the central bent region, but it has moved into another region near the boundary. There I can assume my object has a small Fourier transform and I only get a small error. And so the conventional wisdom among tomographers is, I can violate the sampling conditions on the number of views without getting punished for it. And this is the intuitive understanding for that. The objects I'm imaging, they are of the type where this kind of violation just doesn't cost much. Now, with the interlaced lattice, somewhat unfortunately, things are different. If I have no aliasing and keep my sampling conditions, again, I want this point. I get the sum of the Fourier transforms here, 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 and here. Those three lie outside, so that's fine. But if I reduce my number of views, what will happen is one of these three moves into the center. So this is now suddenly very large, because the maximum of the Fourier transform is at the origin. So I add some very large value to my high frequency component, which should be very small, and so I expect a very large high frequency error, and this is also what I'm seeing. And more detailed analysis gives us the spatial dependence where this error will occur. Okay, so much for what did can sampling theory do in tomography. Tomographic applications have stimulated some extensions of the sampling theorem. One would be periodic sampling. Let's assume these translates are not disjoint, meaning we use a lattice which is too sparse. And let's say we have a situation for an example like this. We use a sparse lattice, and our black copy is overlapped by four others. And we want to use another copy of this sparse lattice, shifted, to get good sampling. And the way to analyze this is to look which regions of my black sets are being overlapped by the same translates. See, so we see that region 1 is not overlapped at all. See, it lies neither in a red copy nor in a blue copy. So region 1 would, the four pieces labeled 1 would form one region of my set. Then region 2 is overlapped by the right blue copy, region 3 by the left blue copy, region 4 by the upper red and 5 by the lower red copy. So this motivates the decomposition written down here. I decompose my set K into possibly very many disjoint copies. Each set KL consists of those points which are overlapped by the same translates. And little m will be the maximum number of overlaps counting the original set. So in our example, we had a maximum number of overlaps of 2. So each point lay either in 1 or 2 of copies. And then my sampling set should be a number of shifted copies of the original set. So this would look like this. If I have m equal 2, I would try to get away with 2 copies. This is one copy, and then I take the union with some other copy, and I get a set like this, which is itself no longer necessarily a subgroup, but still has a lot of structure. Now, how do I reconstruct from those data? The basic idea is very simple. I go on the Fourier transform side and say, let's try to reconstruct the Fourier transform of my data. How do I do this? Well, each copy of my lattice, I can take a discrete Fourier transform of my data. That's an approximation for the exact Fourier transform. And then I take a linear combination of those approximations to hopefully cancel out the errors. And the coefficients for this linear combination are called beta NL, and they will vary in each of these regions in Fourier space I have identified. And if the beta NL satisfies certain systems of equations, this will work out and give us a reconstruction formula basically of the same type as we had before, only slightly more complicated. So we get a sum of reconstructions which look very much like what we would get from the classical sampling theorem. An estimate for the aliasing error is also possible. It also looks very similar to what we had before, namely the integral over the Fourier transform outside the chosen band region plays a role, but it's now multiplied by a factor gamma, where gamma depends on our coefficients. And what happens is, if my sampling sets becomes very clustered, like this, then I expect problems. Intuitively, I expect problems, because if they would totally be coinciding, then I would not have enough data. So if I perturb that a little bit, then I should have probably theoretically good sampling, but there should be some instability. These constellations lead to large coefficients, which means in the reconstruction formula I have subtractions of nearly equal numbers, so it becomes numerically more challenging, and in the theory it leads to larger factors gamma. However, gamma doesn't grow terribly large, even if I do the same test object, artificial test object I had before, where I can measure the discrete error. And here I look at various shifts. The shift of a half basically recombines the two copies to the interlaced lattice, so I get another subgroup. That would be basically this situation where you put the second copy in the middle. See, then you get the interlaced lattice, that is a subgroup, the gamma becomes 1, which is optimally stable. Now we move it along this diagonal up to only 1/20th of the distance of the diagonal, and we see that if it's 1/20th, gamma has grown to a value of about 6. And the reconstruction error, which was less than 1% in the interlaced lattice, has grown to 2%, but the set is now highly clustered, so although there is some loss of stability, it is not catastrophic. Some remarks. First remark already done. The magnitude of gamma is a measure for the stability of the sampling scheme. This method also applies if the set K is multiband, and so it consists of more than one piece, which is of interest in sampling theory. The theory can be formulated much more generally on locally compact abelian groups, a formalism which encompasses basically all applications of classical sampling theory. And software for doing this in multi dimensions is available. Good, I think my time is up, so I'll stop here and thank you.
One question. Is the theory for ultrasound tomography, is it similar or
yes, you can find, if you do ultrasound tomography in the Born approximation, then, or write-off, so you linearize it, then you can do a completely analogous analysis, only your bent region, it still looks like a bow tie, but with somewhat curved boundaries. And this has been done. So you can carry all these aspects through, find efficient sampling scheme, do the numerical analysis of the corresponding algorithm, which would be Devaney's filtered back propagation algorithm, find other efficient sampling schemes.
Do you know about even other applications where you have such a nice theory?
See, for example, in periodic sampling, if you look at three-dimensional tomography in helical scanning mode with multi-slices, what you have is basically a periodic sampling set, where each of the slices may generate one copy of the underlying lattice. So that's a potential application, but I haven't worked out the details for that yet.
guess you didn't want to say much about the numerical applications, but just a one question. I would assume your interpolation function is actually infinitely long, theoretically?
From the sampling theorem, yes. But what we do is we use the reconstruction algorithm on the sparsely sampled data without first interpolating more data. See, we directly reconstruct. We don't bother to fill in the missing data which we haven't measured and then use a standard thing. And so you don't get an infinitely long interpolation function. And the reconstruction algorithm would work just fine, only it is too slow without a certain linear interpolation or some interpolation which has to be inserted to speed it up. And this insert is harmless in the standard case when you have more data, and it's not harmless in the interlaced case and has to be done with a much smaller step size, which slows you down a little bit, but not too much. But we don't do a sync interpolation on the data. We directly reconstruct with a slightly modified algorithm.
Another question?